Coming up next on Tech News Today, two-factor authentication via SMS is maybe a bad idea. Apple is investing $1 billion in manufacturing jobs here in the U.S. Snapchat is getting into the original content game. A look at the technology decisions revealed during FBI Director James Comey's testimony. And Google lets you AI yourself. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1761, recorded Thursday, May 4th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the force of technology. And may the 4th be with you. Or the force. May the 4th. Star Wars Day.
Same thing.
I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. You are very festive. You're wearing a Star Wars shirt.
I'm wearing my Star Wars shirt.
I can't see it over all this other stuff.
I know. You can't really see it. And I've got my lady friends here.
Wow, so festive.
They didn't have these when I was little, the real Star Wars. It was all droids and men.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Yes, I had many of those, actually.
Yes, I had the droids because that's what they had. So now I've gotten all female superhero
Lego pop.
To make up for my really sad childhood, not being able to play with the female action figures. They did not have the Princess Leia action figure.
Really?
No.
There was no Princess Leia action figure?
No.
What is going on in this world?
And there was no Rey action
figure. Yeah, I know. No, I remember that.
You guys keep up.
I'm just impressed that you have clothes that you can wear that have Star Wars on them. I don't. Everybody here was like, hey, I wore my Star Wars thing. I'm like, I don't have anything. I'm such a loser.
Well, I don't know.
No, okay. I'm a loser.
You're what we call a grown-up, maybe.
That's one word for me, I suppose, but I don't buy it. We've got a lot to talk about, so let's jump right into it. Last month, Apple announced that it would make its own graphics chips and wean itself eventually from its long-standing reliance on graphics chips provided by Imagination Technologies. In light of that change, Imagination now announced plans to sell off two of its businesses, one that works on embedded processors and the other that licenses mobile and IoT patents. Also, after being unable to make progress on a new licensing arrangement with Apple, Imagination is setting up a dispute process with Apple based on terms in their licensing agreement. Essentially, Imagination doesn't really believe that Apple can make the switch. And by the way, this is 2 years from now, which is when it's supposed to happen, without violating their patents in some way because of just the longstanding reliance that Apple has had on Imagination's graphics technology.
Yeah, this is a kind of an interesting story. It seems a little bit like a press grab on the part of Imagination.
Yep.
I mean, they're making a big deal about, oh, we're not going to take legal action. But what they're saying essentially is we're not going to take legal action, patent legal action on something that Apple hasn't even created.
I know, right?
So, you know, but at the same time, Apple's not, you know, they're not totally in the right here either. I mean, they've had access to open up the graphics chip and look inside them. So, you know, the idea that they wouldn't use any of that information to create their own, I mean, of course, they're going to probably use something. So, yeah, it's an interesting story.
I mean, 60% of Imagination's business last year was derived around Apple's usage of Imagination's Power VR unit in their devices. 60% of their business. So, I mean, basically what they're staring at is more than half of their business just kind of disintegrating once this relationship ends. And I think they want to do everything that they can to figure out a role for themselves in this new world order of Apple when Apple starts making its own graphics chips. Are they able to really to reach some sort of an agreement with Apple, some sort of a mindshare agreement along the way, potentially? They want to be there after 2 years because Apple's been such a major part of or a major reason for their business and their existence. That's got to be such a, like, what a double-edged sword that is. Like, you are flying so high because you are relied upon by a company like Apple and their most successful consumer product. But then once Apple decides, well, you've got us this far. Thank you very much for all that business that we threw your way. You're welcome. And now what are you going to do?
Mm. It feels a little bit like being the mom of a 14-year-old girl. Like, I, you know, you birth them, you raise them, and then they're just like, I'm done with you. I can do this on my own.
No, you can't. Yeah.
Not necessarily a girl. A boy, too, I think it's the same.
No, you can't.
That's my personal
You can't do this on your own. You need me. You need me to help you through life.
So I could threaten some patent action whenever my children say they don't need me. It's an idea.
Yeah, that'll work.
Ian Thompson at the Register says that over the past few months, hackers have used vulnerabilities in the Signal System Number 7 protocol, or SS7, to empty the bank accounts of some Germans. And before you say they should have turned on two-factor, they did. SS7 is part of how cell phones communicate with each other, and the whole allows very sophisticated cyber criminals to grab the two-factor codes in transit. Part of the scam involves setting up as a telecommunications company. So like I said, it's sophisticated, but it can be done specifically to steal cash during wire transfers. And as Ian wondered in his article, maybe this real-world exploit will finally force the telcos to get their backsides in gear.
Their backsides.
I know. He said backsides, which is kind of clean for Ian. Usually he says more than that.
But that's an Ian word.
Yeah, backside. I'm not sure
either of us would ever use backsides in a normal conversation.
True.
Ian definitely would.
Yeah, he's known to go a lot further than that.
You're right.
So this was first reported in the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung.
That's how it's pronounced.
Sure, that's not how it's pronounced. But we've known about it for years. And it's one of these things where we say, like, you know, we often talk about possible potential exploits, but we haven't seen it in the wild yet. But this one, in the wild, money out of bank accounts. So, and Ars Technica says you can also use this hole to track people's whereabouts, to listen in on their conversations. So let's get it fixed.
Yeah, I mean, since I moved to two-factor authentication, I've been, and I'm happy to do two-factor now, whereas before I wasn't. I feel more secure, definitely, with two-factor authentication via SMS versus without it. So don't get me wrong. I'm happy that it exists because it's better than nothing at all. But it just bugs me that so many companies don't do the extra step. Don't go for kind of the, let's say, the app approach, like using an authenticator app to generate a code as opposed to this, because it's really it's an open hole. And it, like you said, it's been there for years. This whole system, the SS7 system, was created back in the 1980s. It was never designed to operate in this current kind of role with that function in mind. All a hacker really needs is some sort of internal access to kind of tap into, kind of the passage of that information, that data exchange between the cell and the landline networks and everything. And I guess to some extent, people just thought that was a tall order that, that would require some sort of a telco to let someone in or require a big buyout. But obviously it's possible. And it's a whole, like, our security systems just shouldn't be set up on a network that's unencrypted like that,
yeah,
right?
That's true. Authenticator apps. I know I've said this before, but it's absolutely like eating your vegetables or exercising, because I'll get, or eating vitamins, any of that. I'll have this idea. Okay, I am going to clean up my LastPass. I'm going to turn two-factor on everything. I'm going to have all LastPass graded passwords. And it's just, two-factor is exhausting. It takes so much time.
It doesn't, though. So what is the part that takes so much time?
Well,
setting it up?
Not setting it up, but just constantly, like, the authenticator app and, like, oh, every time I need to, press that button.
I mean, it depends on how many times you're hopping between machines. Like, I thought that, too. And I think initially, maybe at this point, I've just gotten used to it. And that's what you have to do, because mm-hmm. it's the most secure thing to do, is that you just kind of have to suck it up and get used to it. When I first started, I probably thought that, too. But really, in reality, like, when I arrive at work, I sit down, and yeah, it takes me 2 minutes to log into all my accounts, but that's versus 1 minute, of doing it really fast. I pull out my phone, I do the two-factor thing, I'm in, and then I don't have to do it for the rest of the day. It's literally a short-term inconvenience, and I mean, ultimately, it's just better than not doing it. It's worth the effort, I promise you.
Well, I think that it's easier on Android than it is on iOS.
That could be.
I mean, every time I have to do two-factor, every time I open LastPass, which is every time I need to get into anything.
Mm.
Is that not what you have to do?
Well, you know, I should probably have two-factor on my LastPass. That's the one thing I don't
have. I see. You eat your broccoli, Jason Howell.
I have two-factor on everything else. I don't have it on LastPass, though. And you're right. That's a really good point.
That's what takes so long.
Yeah. Well, my wife and I, like, we share LastPass accounts. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I have to get her into. Believe me, I get it. I get the pushback for two-factor authentication. Yeah. I think it's worth the effort. And I've looked into moving LastPass, which is a completely different world. You're right, because you have to. I mean, it literally has everything. When I'm sharing accounts with my wife, that's just a whole other world, I guess. So, yeah, let's do it. Let's make a commitment to do it.
Yes, let's.
Yeah?
Yeah,
here. Yeah, are you in?
Shake on it.
All right, because we both got work to do, apparently.
We do have work to do.
All right, I'll help you and you help me.
Okay.
If need be. SpaceX has a plan to send internet beaming satellites into orbit starting in 2019 ahead of the lighting up of its network in 2024. SpaceX is looking to get a prototype satellite into space sometime this year, with a follow-up taking to the skies early next year. In total, the plan would put 4,425 satellites into low Earth orbit by way of Falcon 9 rockets. The idea would be to provide high-speed, low-latency internet to Earth without the need to dig trenches and roll out cabling to all of those who are looking to connect down below. So this is SpaceX getting into another, you know, getting themselves into another kind of industry, let's say, with broadband. It would operate as a mesh network. Latencies between 25 to 35 milliseconds, which is actually really fast. It's better than DSL, close to modern cable and fiber systems. Not so shabby when you're talking about beaming internet up and back down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, more and more Tesla is becoming one of the big five, you know, the big five, I guess, or Facebook, Apple, Google. I don't know what the other two are. What are the big four? Microsoft,
yeah. Amazon.
Thank you. Yeah. Microsoft and Amazon. All sorts of things. Because, of course, Facebook and Google and Amazon, too, are all really involved in getting internet everywhere. So it's interesting that they've stepped into that. They had written testimony to the Senate. You know, this is a big deal, mm-hmm. having to use satellites. And they're in lower orbit. And I'm not sure why, but
I mean, maybe that's part of the reason why latency is improved. You know, mm-hmm. it's a little bit closer than maybe putting it even further out there. I mean, by comparison, when you consider that, I think there was an estimate at the end of last year, 1,460 satellites flying in orbit currently. And then you're talking about another 4,425 satellites, thanks to SpaceX, by the year 2024. That's a lot of flying heaps of metal in the sky. I wonder kind of the complications that might pose to other things that are trying to, you know, break through all of that noise.
Space is big,
but I mean, no matter what, when you're adding, well, I don't, you know, I don't know how much you're adding here.
A lot.
You know, a lot more than what's up. Dang. Let's take a step back for a second. More space junk is not good.
Yeah.
And if you have to worry about flying and navigating through that, because mm-hmm. the Earth, you know, space is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Earth's kind of inner space is not nearly as huge.
Orbit.
There's limited space there.
Good point. In a press release today, Apple says they plan to spend a little bit of their giant pile of cash to support advanced manufacturing jobs in the United States. Tim Cook told CNBC that the company is creating an advanced manufacturing fund with an initial investment of $1 billion. Now, currently, the company employs 2 million workers in the United States, which they say is a 1,500% growth just since the launch of the iMac in 1998. Cook did not give a number of jobs, just the amount of money. And advancing manufacturing could, of course, give jobs to people or to robots. You could argue, though, that this kind of investment does create the specific kind of jobs that are growing, human jobs, I mean, growing in spite of the robots.
No word on whether these investments are actually going to bring money back into Apple or into the fund itself. You have to imagine that you know, we've heard President Trump like a lot of times. There have been a lot of these announcements about bringing manufacturing jobs back into the U.S. It's of high importance to the current administration. Apple's actually been working on this since before President Trump became President Trump, when he was still president-elect. So they were working prior to that. So it's been in the works for a little while. There's also been some kind of guessing around whether Apple is potentially going to move some of its iPhone manufacturing back into the U.S., or Foxconn has even considered kind of bringing its manufacturing facilities back into the U.S. So I wonder if this fund, if it potentially plays into those potential plans.
Yeah, I mean, right now most of Apple's manufacturing happens in China, mm-hmm. With the exception of the Mac Pros, which are manufactured in Austin, Texas, and are often delayed. It's not a smooth operation there. So, but, you know, Trump, just his new tax policy is great for Apple. Mm-hmm. And as we've, you know, seen, they follow the money in terms of taxes, where they have to pay the least taxes. And that's often not in the United States. And it looks like Trump really wants it to be. So, you know, however you feel about Trump, like Apple will stand to benefit to have more of their, you know, more manufacturing happening in the United States. So the new website that you were looking at, they show all the jobs that, you know, Apple's big on. Like, we have jobs everywhere. We have them mm-hmm. all over the United States. And we'll see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Snapchat is getting into the original content game, according to a report by the Wall Street Journal. Snap TV, I don't know if that's going to be the eventual name, but that makes a lot of sense, will eventually appear in the Snapchat Stories section. The company is working alongside TV producers for networks like NBC Universal, ESPN, ABC, and Turner, among others, to create 3 to 5 minute original episodes that might even last longer than the 2-day disappearing act that you get from, I think there's currently a show on there, The Voice on Snapchat, kind of a tie-in to the TV show of The Voice. Those disappear after 2 days. So the idea with this content is that it would actually last longer, give people more of a chance to catch it before it disappears entirely. Mm-hmm.
Snap is, it's in LA. They're very LA. So, like, unlike Apple or Google, I think that they'll have a sort of smoother transition mm-hmm. into creating original content. According to the Wall Street Journal article, they talk about how Snap is liked, like the you know, old media executives really like Snap because they value, and they always have valued, you know, story-driven, creator-driven mm-hmm. content, not user-generated content.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, YouTube is a lot of, you know, old Hollywood right next to, you know, your the YouTuber next door, essentially, where Snap has really separated it. They've done the same with journalism and news. Every, you know, there's the curated stories and then there's stories. And Snap never, like, if you go into the UI, they're never on equal footing. It's always, you know, on different tiers. So I think that's interesting for sure. So I'm not a big consumer of Snapchat. I like their filters. That's uh-huh. pretty much it. So we'll see.
Yeah, and they're even working with producers to kind of let them figure out how they create content that can engage the Snapchat audience and engage on that kind of network. Also, how to shoot for vertical video, because of course Snapchat is a vertical video sort of platform. Mm-hmm. So if you're creating content for the platform, it's got to be vertical, which has to be interesting for Hollywood to hear and to kind of internalize, because there's long been a lot of kind of about shooting vertical video from anyone who's has a history in video. But the reality is that's part of the current landscape. That's part of how a lot of the younger generation especially is used to seeing their video. They're not used to turning their phone to the side. That's just not what you do. You hold it the way you hold it, and you got to cater to that audience mm-hmm. and the format.
Yeah. All the characters and all the shows also have to have dog ears. They have to keep rainbows and wear flower crowns.
Yeah, you can apply filters to any actor in any show, just on demand.
That's worth it.
That's what I'm hoping for anyways.
We want to hear from you. You can email us any time of the day. You won't wake us up. Don't worry. It's tnt@twit.tv. And of course, you can subscribe to Tech News Today anywhere where you can get podcasts. Next, how long does it take to search through 650,000 emails? Not as long as FBI Director James Comey thinks. You can find out why. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. you've cut it close. You've worked out. You have taken a shower. You sent off a couple of work emails. You got in a few Snapchat filters added to your story. You maybe even ate breakfast. You got 2 seconds of the news. Your laptop's in your bag. You have just enough time to make it to work. You turn around to lock the front door. And where are your keys? You have no idea where they are. You're going to be late. You plan so well. We've all been there. Now with Tracker, you never have to worry about losing your things again. The Tracker Bravo is a coin-sized device. It's constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can put it on your keys or your bag or attach it to your wallet if you want. It looks nice. Then you can locate the misplaced keys, the wallet, the bag, your computer in seconds. All you do is pair the tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with a tap of a button. It is that easy. If you lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker device or ask your Amazon Echo, and your phone will ring even when it's on silent. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. Family sharing lets you track the same Tracker Bravo for multiple phones. You can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. With over 4.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map even if it is miles away. The Tracker app records its last known location. When another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll get a GPS update of where your item is. The distance indicator on the Tracker app will show you if you're getting closer to your items. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. Stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com, enter promo code TNT, and you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT, for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. Yesterday, FBI Director James Comey testified in court for the first time, explaining why he reopened the Clinton email investigation just 9 days before the presidential election. Joining us to discuss why Comey says he notified Congress about new emails is Patrick Tucker, technology editor from Defense One. Welcome back to the show, Patrick.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you write that Comey is basically saying the metadata made me do it. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, so yesterday it was actually a pretty remarkable turn of events. Comey shows up, Capitol Hill, Senate Judiciary Committee, a lot of expectation about this testimony. Dianne Feinstein gets to him and says, why did you send a letter 9 days before a major election, huge and historic, saying we're reopening this case? And so a lot of people have had speculations about this. This is really key. A lot of people said, well, clearly he's trying to throw it for Clinton. At the time, a lot of people said clearly he's trying to throw it for Trump. I mean, to sort of destroy the entire electoral process. So Comey has this story. He says, here's what happened. The morning of October 27th, my investigators come to me, my investigative team that was on the Clinton case, they come to me and they say, we have looked at Anthony Weiner's laptop. It's an enormous trove of data that we can see, messages to, messages from, and it suggests that Huma Abedin was forwarding him everything from Hillary Clinton. We need a search warrant right away. All we have right now is metadata, but there could be thousands of emails here. And most importantly, and this is where the cognitive bias comes in, it could be those emails that you yourself, Director Comey, were looking for at the very beginning of this investigation. So all they had was metadata that said that Huma Abedin was forwarding a lot of stuff to Anthony Weiner. They needed a search warrant and they needed to look into it. Now, here's where things get really weird. Comey says, okay, I'm going to give you permission to go to a judge, get that search warrant, and now I have a choice. As Director Comey is director of the FBI, I can either reveal that I've granted you this search warrant permission asking ability, because they have to go to a judge, or I can conceal it. And he doesn't look at it like, I can just be cool with this for now. He sees this very distinct binary, reveal or conceal. And he's like, conceal would be catastrophic. Now, what's weird is that they get the search warrant and they get 650,000 emails that are of interest. But then It's actually only like 6,000 of those that are really of interest. 6,000 that might actually maybe contain the thing that they're looking for. And they're actually looking for something very specific, which is like criminal intent. So the question that I want to know is, you're looking at metadata. You're going to use that as an excuse to tell your agents you can go out and get a search warrant. And all of that's sort of fine. But then when the actual corpus of data comes back, you have no one in the FBI that you can go to and say, how long would it reasonably take to look through this and come up with a scope of an investigation? And that's maybe something you want to know before you send a letter to Congress saying that you're reopening an investigation in Hillary Clinton 9 days before an election.
I would think so. Now, the term metadata is thrown around a lot. You hear about it all the time, especially in stories like this. Explain what exactly constitutes metadata in the scope of a story like this. It's not, I mean, is it raw email information or is it just headers? What exactly is that metadata?
So Comey himself is not specific about this in the testimony that he gives in response to Dianne Feinstein's question. But he does say that it's clear that Huma Abedin is forwarding Anthony Weiner emails, including emails from Hillary Clinton's Verizon BlackBerry. And that could potentially include emails from the first 3 months that she was the Secretary of State that they couldn't find. So we do know that it includes device type, and we also know that it includes emails that are directly from the Hillary Clinton Verizon BlackBerry domain. And the Times probably as well, but that's immaterial to what we're talking about here. That would be more of like the metadata that you would use as part of an actual investigation into whether someone was at a place that they said they were talking to someone that they said that they were talking to. So here, the thing that really the metadata that really enlivened James Comey was metadata that suggested a forwarding of emails from Hillary Clinton's Verizon BlackBerry to Huma Abedin to Anthony Weiner. So it's actually a really fascinating story about how the presence of just a little bit of metadata, just a little bit of clue, if that's the thing you've been looking for, if that's the thing you've been hunting for months and months and months, can cause you to take a series of actions that push out other actions that are probably pretty reasonable. So as soon as they saw that a certain number of these were from a particular device and they knew that device, then Comey and these investigators, I think all of them, seized on this and said to each other, no matter what happens next, we have to look through this, even if it means sending a letter to Congress saying we're reopening Hillary Clinton's email investigation before the election. And what they didn't do is say, maybe not all of these 650,000 emails are actually going to be germane to that. So we should give them a sense of how long this will actually take before we do that. Or maybe just get the search warrant and then complete the investigation, because by the time anybody reads the letter that you're sending, it'll be done. But when we're talking about metadata, that's what we're talking about specifically. The bit of it that was of interest most to James Comey was clear indications that emails were coming from Hillary Clinton's Verizon BlackBerry. They had never had access to that, and particularly they didn't have access to emails that she sent from that device in her first 3 months. And that's where they wanted to go and look for some shred of intent that said that she meant to break the law. That's the thing that they were searching for the entire time, that they're really obsessed with. And you could make an argument that they should be or they shouldn't be. It's up to you and your politics and your worldview, and you know, go and die on that mountain however you want. But basically, the thing that he's been obsessed with is finding this intent, finding this little note that says, I meant to break the law, or I was fine with it. I was cavalier about it. And they were hoping that she's put that in a letter, in an email that she sent from her phone, which they couldn't find in the first 3 months of her tenure as Secretary of State. And then they would know fully whether or not she had meant to break the law. And then they could suggest that there should be prosecution. And they came back after finding 6,000 emails that were actually germane to that question, and said, no, nothing here to change our worldview at all. We've got a full scope of this thing now, and we've decided that would not recommend that Hillary Clinton face any prosecution or Huma or anybody else. So this is our investigation now concluded, and voila. In the meantime, people are rushing to the polls. The news cycle's gone nuts. A whole bunch of people have changed their decision-making, perhaps. And that's where it becomes difficult, too, because now you're wondering, how much effect did that actually have? I've seen some exit poll analysis that suggested that sentiment begins to change when you ask people, as soon as they exit a poll, whether or not Hillary Clinton's new email scandal changed their thinking. And there's some data to suggest that when people answered that question as they left a polling place, that is a thing that they said. But that's also still, I think, more correlation than causation. You know, and I want to be fair here. I think that clearly James Comey should have called a forensic computer scientist or just a data scientist and said, how long does it take to go through this? Mm-hmm. At the same time saying James Comey definitely had a causal effect on this election, that's harder to make a real case for. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence. There's a lot of correlational evidence. But really saying this equaled a change in the mind of millions of Americans, it's just very hard to do. So I'm not sure what conclusion to draw, except that he says that he's now mildly nauseous at the idea that he might have influenced the election based on that decision. And I would say, to avoid further incidents of nausea, consult a data scientist before you write a letter to Congress. I mean, maybe.
Write that out on a prescription. Yeah.
Right. So from a technological perspective, or like either understand, like our government officials understanding technology or like pretending not to understand technology, which I think that's the big question, right? I mean, it was a time issue. He was worried about how much time it would take. You say, he could have consulted a data scientist or, a forensic scientist. Edward Snowden tweeted, you quoted this tweet where he said, it would only take minutes or hours for him to look through it. So he's either saying, I don't understand how technology works in this sense. I'm not willing to find an expert that does understand this, or he is not telling the truth. And we don't really know which, right?
Right. We really don't. We do know that the investigators came to him. And they had a very specific thing. They said, we think it's going to take us a very long time to get through this massive amount of information. And that's probably a prudent perspective to take if you're an investigator. You're like, we've got a bunch of new evidence. We have no clue what's going to be in there beyond that. It's sort of like you discover a huge trove of documents in an old warehouse or something, or in a storage unit that's been sealed up. And so that's the kind of mental frame that we approach this question from. Having said that, the FBI is full. And actually, I got to credit Andy Greenberg at Wired, because this is the first question that he asked as soon as both disgraced Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, former DIA head, said it will take them forever to get all through that. And Edward Snowden replied, no, it would take hours. He consulted a forensic expert at the FBI who said, no, there's lots of ways to reduce that corpus of data down to something very small. Now, the key here is that it's not necessarily that James Comey didn't understand technology. It's more like he listened to his investigators. They had no sense of the political ramifications of the thing that they were going to do, because they're like bloodhounds. They've got they know exactly what they're looking for. And he was there too. He wanted to find that thing more than he cared about any political considerations to Hillary Clinton, or for that matter, any of the millions of people that voted for her. He was interested in finding that thing. So his first action was not to question that opinion from his investigators. If really a bunch of emails are the same thing as a found storehouse or a found physical storehouse of documents, he didn't question it, not necessarily because he didn't understand technology, but because he didn't understand this aspect of it, that there's a whole bunch of data that you can exclude simply by setting a series of parameters that say, we don't want CCs or BCCs, which is something that Edward Snowden brought up. You can cross-hatch different things to exclude a bunch of emails that are clearly not going to be relevant to Hillary Clinton. And there's just a lot of different tricks that you can use to bring that corpus down from something enormous to something very small. It's just What we know is this. Based on his testimony yesterday, this was not a consideration that entered into his head at all. He just knew that his investigators were coming to him with their hair on fire, and he had to write Congress right now and say, I don't know how long this will take. And he probably excluded the idea that maybe you should talk to a technical expert to tell you how long it's actually going to take before you write that letter to Congress. So it's a weird impulse of him, and it speaks to his impulsiveness. Mm-hmm. And his impulse is to kind of be pretty Boy Scoutish and maybe a little bit self-righteous about things and tell the entire world what he's about to do so that he can inure the department from any sort of scrutiny or any sort of suspicion as to their motives. And in the process, he wound up making a big mess. So I'm not sure what you do with that in terms of questioning whether or not James Comey really understands technology. I think that he understands the bit of it that frustrates him.
Well, there will be people that watch this that say, like, okay, you know, Hillary lost, get over it. So why do you think it's still important to be discussing this topic at this point for the future?
Because it is historic. This is a moment in history that suddenly changed. I mean, there's actually a lot of evidence to suggest that this revelation from James Comey, this letter, changed the entire media scape in the run-up to the election. And that's important, because it changes the conversations that were happening about who's going to be our next leader. And whether you can trace that back to a pure causal outcome is different. But it did change things. And it's important because his inability to grasp how you can use technology to come up with a better communication that's going to be read by the entire world, that's going to be read by history, that says, this is how long it's going to take us to conclude this investigation. Simply because he didn't have a full grasp of the technological tools that were available to him, he made a decision that's now historic. And it might have swung the course of history, or at very least, it's certainly a part of history. And what that tells you is that, what it sort of screamed to me is that thank God I know a little something about statistics, enough to know that I should ask somebody who knows much more about statistics before I make a decision this monumentous about finding one thing in 650,000 emails. And this is going to keep coming up again and again and again, because we're just awash in a volume of information. That's what happened here. We found a bunch of information. People got really excited about what it could contain without figuring out how you find that and then how you communicate that to the entire world. So instead, James Comey made a statement to Congress that wound up going out to the entire world. And what this really shows is that in the future, that sort of thing is preventable or changeable on the basis of how you understand, how you go about looking for a thing that you're looking for. And for him to say, regardless of how you feel about any political result of this, for him to say, I feel mildly nauseous at the possibility that I influenced an election through something that I did, shows that he didn't have a full grasp of what he might do or what he could do. And now we're all mildly nauseous. So, you know, that's how that works for, I mean, no matter who you are or how you voted, we're all kind of mildly nauseous about this. So statistics, computer science, data science, this is now part of investigation. And it's somebody that you want to talk to before you make a big statement about a huge bunch of information that you're going to search through digitally, electronically.
Absolutely. And also you mentioned confirmation bias, which existed always, but I think is really everywhere because of social media. It's just, you know, it's exponentially more influential, confirmation bias is. And at least we're talking about it now. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much. Patrick Tucker is he's a technology editor. He is the technology editor at Defense One. That's defenseone.com. He's written for MIT Technology Review, Slate, and many more. He is at DefTechPat on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Patrick. Have a good night. All right, feedback time. Randy wrote in to Megan, but you can write in TNT at twit.tv and reach us as well. But to say, not sure if you remember me, my wife is the one who passed out using the Samsung Gear VR. I appreciated you forwarding me the letter from another viewer describing the heart condition. I started working at Cisco in January and got health insurance. The doctor actually found a hole in Amber, that's his wife, in Amber's heart between the upper two chambers. It is likely this is the reason that she was fainting and generally feeling tired and weak. She's having open heart surgery next month. It is as low risk as possible for open heart surgery, and we expect everything to go smoothly. If I remember correctly, her condition is similar to the one expressed in the email from another viewer that you forwarded to me. Thank you for your concern, for reaching out. Keep up the great work. My wife and I listen to TNT every night before bed.
That is awesome. It is awesome. So we talked about, he had written in, my wife is passing out VR. We kind of laughed a little bit about it. And well, maybe don't try VR. And so then we got a lot of email. We got an email from Charles, who is also a viewer. He and his wife are viewers. And Charles said, you know, it's funny, but that the same thing happened to my wife. And he, you know, he sent me an article to take a look at. And then, you know, I passed it on to him, and I'm so glad that I did. So really, thank you, Charles, as well.
We have some pretty awesome fans of this show. It's like it takes a village.
Yes, it does.
Very good. So we're happy to hear that. All, you know, wish you the very best in the surgery next month. Let us know how it goes, please. Google has a gift for makers with a Raspberry Pi 3. We'll talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsors of this episode. Rocket Mortgage is perfect for you, for the people that watch and follow this show, because, you know, it's all online. We live our lives in the digital age. We live it online. We're used to doing everything with a technical perspective, as opposed to always having to, you know, place that phone call or meet with that person face-to-face. Maybe that doesn't fit into our current world where we do so much online. And that's what Rocket Mortgage is all about. Rocket Mortgage is a company that you can trust. They have your best interest in mind when you're looking for a mortgage. So you want a relationship with a company that has that. With Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. And you can play around with the numbers too. You can adjust the rate. You can adjust the length of the loan. Do it all on your own time, in real time, and make sure that you get the right mortgage solution for you, for your scenario. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, skip the waiting. Go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
TNT's fan of the day is Bookmaster from chat in TNT a few days back. Brian showed a video of a dog chasing another dog through a portable dog tunnel. I can't even remember why.
This is like post-show.
So we thought it was adorable. Cut to yesterday's post-show, and Bookmaster in chat shared a video of his dog, the dog from the video, whose name is Penelope, watching the video of her.
What? My brain just exploded. So, so crazy.
So Penelope's barking at herself, or she's barking at you. I know she's not barking at me.
That is crazy. So Brian plays random video from the internet of dog chasing other dog through tube. We play it in post show. Just so happens that a fan of the show is watching and is like, oh yeah, that's my dog. That's my video. I recorded that. How weird.
So yeah. It should also show us just not to take, you know, random people's videos, to use them as entertainment on the show.
I think Buckmaster was okay with it.
Yeah, I think he was. Yeah.
Hey, I found it on Reddit. It's up for grabs.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's totally. It's on the front page of Reddit. Yeah. You know it's clear.
And as a dog owner myself, I know anyone wants to use pictures or video of my dog for any purpose, please
go for it.
Because it just makes you proud.
Buckmaster basically told us in chat, said, it's so random that I happened to catch you playing her video the other day. And told us also that Penelope is 3.5 years old.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cute
dog.
Mm-hmm. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Take a video. Now I feel like we should start another nest of Penelope watching Penelope. But that would only involve Buckmaster, unless someone wants to go over
unless
to his
Penelope
house.
Does it Penelope's self.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Any way you do it, we want to hear from you. Post it on whatever social media. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT or just email it to us at tnt@twit.tv if you like to you know, be off the social medias when you tell us how you watch. We can do that too.
We can do that. Patrick Dale Hanty here from Twit, but also in chat, says TNT fans saving lives and posting dog videos.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. This one's for all the cranky hippos of the world. Rush out and find a copy of the latest Magpie magazine, and you'll be rewarded for that effort with a Google AIY Projects kit that actually enables Raspberry Pi 3 owners to turn their Raspberry Pi 3 into a voice-controlled virtual assistant using Google's recently announced Assistant SDK. The kit includes a voice hardware accessory on top. That's what it's called, also known as a voice hat. I like that. A stereo mic for voice command input, a speaker, wires, and a large arcade-style button for the very top, which is what you hit to like trigger assistant listening to you. And then it's all used with this cardboard case, this like square, this cubical cardboard case to mount it all into. It's a maker kit. You put it all together, and you've got your own little portable Google Assistant.
Google loves to make things out of cardboard.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to make a self-driving car out of cardboard.
A self-driving cardboard?
Self-driving cardboard. Good one.
That's what they need to do. Seriously.
I love everything about this story except for the AIY, artificial intelligence yourself. I don't I don't like that.
Like, you don't like that?
Like DIY.
DIY.
AIY.
It's AIY is a fork of DIY.
Yeah, it just seems weird. Do artificial intelligence yourself, but they just call it AIY, so that makes it sound like you're gonna put a computer inside your brain.
Someday,
right?
Someday you might actually put assistant in your brain, and it might help you be smarter. I don't know.
But this one is not always listening to you as your actual Google Home is.
You actually have to hit that arcade button. You go.
I like that.
And then it prompts you for your command, and you do it. Yeah, it's a neat little kit. I mean, it comes with the magazine. The Magpie magazine is actually the official Raspberry Pi magazine. So then, of course, I have to ask Brian, our resident Raspberry Pi tinkerer and a co-host of Know How, is this on your radar? Or it is now?
Obviously now. Yeah, no, I hadn't heard about it before, but that's pretty cool, except I kind of would want it to be voice-activated, too, because I just did the Raspberry Pi Alexa project, and that allows you to do voice activation. Mm. That was a lot of fun. I'll check it out, though. I
wonder if they get there at some point to allow for that. Or maybe they do, and they just opted to go a hardware route with this. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a good question.
They don't want you setting off your phone in parallel with it, maybe?
Yeah, there would have to be some sort of smarts. Because with the Home, if you have your phone in your pocket and the Home, they both listen, but it like routes to one or the other. They're smart enough to recognize that the other one is there and that one of them issues the command. I bet this probably doesn't tap into that capability.
No. Right. But I mean, maybe they are really considering people who don't want a device listening to them all the time.
Yeah. Sure. Kinda, this is like the Amazon Dot, the Echo Dot, right? That you have to hit a button, right?
No, it's not the tap.
It's the tap. There we go. It's the tap that you have to hit the button.
The Dot is always listening to me. But yeah, I wonder what the Venn diagram is of makers and people who don't want a device inside their house listening to them all the time. I bet it's kind of like that.
I think makers just enjoy the ability to make pretty much anything. If it's a kit, you know, it's a new thing and they could do something new with it. Repurpose that old Raspberry Pi 3. I don't know. It's kind of cool. Look for issue 57 is the one to look for.
Burke
has something important to say, although it's less of words. It's really just a diagram of the Burke button.
I think that what Burke is saying is that he wants that button to be able to talk, and also he doesn't want a device always listening to him. If he could press a button to speak only, then...
There's another hand there. This is getting weird. I wonder what Burke's box would do when you hit the button.
We should get him a big button.
What does the button on Burke's box do?
That's a big question.
Question for you. That's the question of the day, TNT at twit.tv. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show, of course, by emailing TNT at twit.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And find us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV.
I bet Burke's button brings him Coke.
Like
the drink Coke.
Probably, yes. Coke, Coca-Cola.
Or root beer,
yes. Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Share your thoughts about everything that we say or don't say on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. And please subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. Make sure, and if you subscribed before and you watched live, make sure that you continue to subscribe in any place where you can subscribe. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. What do you know? Burke's Button delivered a Coke. It's very strange.
Just like the White House.
It's like it magically transformed that root beer into a Coke. That's the magic of Burke's Button. Thanks to Burke, of course, for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Brian for being our technical director and helping out with the show here as well. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you all for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
Woohoo!